the number one sports site in the world.
Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's.
Welcome to the fastest 2 hours in radio
on Yahoo Sports Radio
and yahoosportsradio.com.
This is the Big E Sports Show
with the one and only, the triple threat, the Big E,
Alyssa Walker-Campbell. The 6 foot former Sooner women's basketball player.
She can post, pin,
turn the volume up,
and produce with some of today and yesterday's biggest stars.
Alyssa Walker Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Get ready to go beyond the X's and O's
with today's star athletes, coaches, and sports figures.
This is the Big E Sports Show
right now.
Now from the Quicken Loans studios of Yahoo Sports Radio.
Are you ready?
Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze.
Here she is, the one and only, the Big E, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell, I want to welcome you back to hour number two at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we are inside the Quicken Loans studios right here in Houston, and the MLB All-Star break, it is behind us, and the trade deadline, it is rapidly approaching, so things are definitely heating up. There are so many storylines we will be watching, specifically with the Milwaukee Brewers. They did very well, if you think back to last year, they did very well at the trade deadline, and I'm very curious to see, will they be buyers or will they be sellers? Delighted to have with us tonight on the Big E Sports Show, color commentator for the Milwaukee Brewers, that is Bill Schroeder. Let me tell you a little bit about Bill. He spent eight seasons in the big leagues with the Brewers and the California Angels, and he just released his new book, If These Walls Could Talk, Milwaukee Brewers, stories from the Milwaukee Brewers dugout, locker room, and press box. He teamed up with our good friends at Triumph Books. Good evening, Bill. First time on the show.
Yeah, listen, thanks for having me. Season's gone pretty quick, and the Brewers we're going to have a very interesting final couple of weeks in July.
Well, the Milwaukee Brewers, they are currently fourth in the NL Central. Give us just a mid-season report. What has gone right and wrong in the first half of the season?
Well, I mean, I guess what has gone right is the fact that the organization in the offseason was dedicated to a rebuilding process. It started the trading deadline last year, you know, traded away a lot of their high-priced, big-name talent. Carlos Gomez, Aramis Ramirez, Gerardo Parra, to name a few, Francisco Rodriguez. And David Stearns, our new general manager, has said, with the blessing of Mark Adonazio, our owner, that we're going to rebuild. We're going to stock the minor league system. And it is a season of, opportunity for some of these young players. So I guess, to put a grade on it would be difficult. I guess incomplete, because it's really not, a contending type season for the Brewers. They're looking to see what they have going into next year. But, so far so good. They've been very competitive. They've had some really good facets to their game, some facets that need a lot of work. But that's what you get with a young team.
You know, Bill, what were your expectations coming into the 2016 season? Is this where you thought they would be?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of better than I thought it would be. I think people were expecting, not a whole lot of competition, not a competitive ball club. But, even in the games that they have lost, they've been very much in it. I mean, they have a lot of one-run loss. Matter of fact, they had two consecutive walk-off losses, one in Cincinnati on a pass ball and another one on an error. So, again, when you're dealing with young talent, you're going to have mistakes being made. But it's been fun. It's been interesting. Had a couple of really good stories of starting pitcher Junior Guerra, a guy that has an incredible story. He's pitched all over the world, 31-year-old rookie. And he has really pitched lights out this year. Zach Davies, who the Brewers got in the Gerardo Parra deal with the Orioles last year, has been a bright surprise. So it's been a lot of fun watching a lot of these young guys evolve at the major league level.
Milwaukee Brewers color commentator has held the position since 1995. Bill Schroeder is with us for the very first time at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We'd love to connect with you. Join us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. We're also going to be talking about his new book that's just out, If These Walls Could Talk, Milwaukee Brewers, stories from the Milwaukee Brewers dugout, locker room, and press box. And believe me, they are juicy. So many great stories in there. So tell us quickly, what kind of moves do you think the Brewers are going to make at the trade deadline? I mean, what do they have to offer? I mean, major assets. Well, were we talking about Jonathan LaCroix? Is he still going to be there come August 1st?
That's a good question. I know there's a lot of teams clamoring for Jonathan LaCroix. I mean, he's one of the top catchers in all of baseball when you consider offense and defense, game calling and things like that. He has one more year on his contract with the Brewers, and he's very affordable. It's a very, organization-friendly contract, and there are a number of teams that have been actively involved in talking with the Brewers about him. You know, Chris Carter, first baseman. And again, Junior Guerra, another guy that, you know, really, really came out, you know, rose from the ashes, if you will, and has started well. There's been a lot of talk about him, Jeremy Jeffress, Will Smith, a lot of the guys that have had success in the major leagues in the past that, you know, teams actively pursuing, those guys. But, you know, the Brewers are kind of in a catbird seat when it comes to that. It's a matter of what kind of deal, that they're going to agree to. I know that they're going to, ask an awful lot for Jonathan Lucroy. That's a commodity that you don't see come around every day, a catcher that can hit for averages, hitting over 300. I mean, he's thrown out more base runners or would-be base stealers than any catcher in the big league. So it's going to be a hefty asking price if a team wants him before the 1st of August.
Well, Jonathan Lucroy, he is a hot commodity. I'd love for you to expound on just the importance of his position as a catcher. I mean, here are the Brewers. They have a young pitching staff. You need a veteran catcher to work with these guys.
Yeah, no doubt. And the Brewers have their backup. Martin Maldonado is a very experienced, good game caller. Very, very good defensive player. Not nearly the offensive player of Jonathan Lucroy. But, yeah, I mean, it's important. He is, you know, along with Ryan Braun, the face of his franchise right now. And it'd be very difficult to give him up. And I think that's why the Brewers are going to hold out as long as they can, to try and get as much as they can for him. They're just not going to give him away because you don't come across guys like Jonathan Lucroy every day, and if he continues to do what he's been doing, he's going to be, you know, one of the best catchers the Brewers have ever had, and they've had a number of, you know, pretty good ones, including Ted Simmons, B.J. Surhoff. So, you know, I think, you know, Jonathan, the Brewers are kind of licking their chops. You know, they wouldn't mind keeping him, but I think again, I think long term, I think the best move for them would be to move Lucroy and get a lot of really good young talent.
Bill Schroeder is our special guest tonight. Of course, the Milwaukee Brewers color commentator. 8 seasons in the big leagues with the Brewers and the California Angels. And right now we're going to shift gears and talk about his brand new book, If These Walls Could Talk, Milwaukee Brewers, stories from the Milwaukee Brewers dugout, locker room, and press box. You cover all the highs and lows. Tell us about the new book.
Well, you know, it was funny because, you know, I got a call from Drew Olson, who works with ESPN Radio, and asked me if I'd be interested in doing a book. And, you know, I told him, I said, that's the last thing I'd ever think I'd ever get involved with. I'm not a writer. I barely read books, let alone, you know, trying to put one together.
Sure.
But he said, well, let's just try. Just get, you know, I'll give you a digital record. You start telling stories. He came up with some ideas for me to talk about. And then it kind of morphed into, you know, since I was a player, and now I'm a broadcaster. Let's talk a little bit about the broadcasting end of it, what a producer, director does, you know, how you call a game up in the booth, how you identify pitches, and obviously the stories, you know, from my college days, from my minor league days and big league days and things like that. You know, the book starts out with the Brewers, you know, Mount Rushmore. Obviously, you know who those guys are, mm-hmm. You know, Bud Selig, Bob Uecker, Paul Molitor, Robin Yount, extensive stories on those guys. We even included their Hall of Fame speeches in there. And a lot of people think that's a filler, but it really isn't. I mean, try and find the Hall of Fame speeches of any player just randomly on the internet. You can't find them. So we, you know, Drew had to dig, finally contacted the Hall of Fame folks, and they sent it to him. So we had a great deal of fun with it, a lot of great stories. We got into nicknames, we got into restaurants, we got into all kind of stuff. A lot of there were some stories that didn't make the cut, maybe a little bit too racy, but maybe that's for another book, maybe down the road sometime.
Oh, I love Hall of Fame speeches. They're always so inspirational. I have to tell you, the
especially
highlight of
Bob Uecker.
Yes, let's talk about Bob Uecker, because there were so many hilarious one-liners in the broadcast booth with him.
Yeah, I mean, what you hear on the radio with him on a nightly basis, and I know everybody has the opportunity all over the world with the internet the way it is. And, I mean, you can get every radio broadcast, but the wit and you know the charisma, you know the comedic timing that he has is not an act. I mean, he's like that 24 hours a day. I mean, he'll be laughing and have guys laughing, you know, 2:30 on the bus coming in from Pittsburgh. And on our way to the hotel, I mean, it's just nonstop. And the guy's 82 years old. It's incredible to be around him. I learned so much about him. And, in the book, there are a lot of his, great one-liners and things like that. So, it's been an honor for me. You know, this game has made me realize this book, doing this book has made me realize one thing, how lucky I have been and some of the people I've been able to get to know as a player, as a broadcaster. You know, you went and see Vin Scully once a year. In Los Angeles,
oh,
you know,
yes.
What a class act, you know, and, you know, it's just been a blessing my whole baseball career from the time I played until right now. I'm sitting here, at a hotel in Pittsburgh waiting to do a Brewers Pirates game, at which point we head home and go on a 10-day homestand. It's fun. I've been doing it 22 years, and I can't imagine ever stopping doing it.
You are truly living the dream. Of course, it has been a wonderful conversation with Bill Schroeder, Milwaukee Brewers color commentator. Go ahead and get a copy of the new book, If These Walls Could Talk, Milwaukee Brewers. Congratulations, Bill, and safe travels. We look forward to another conversation. Thank you.
Anytime, Alyssa. Thanks. Had a good time. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Much more coming your way right here in hour number two at YSR.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio. Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
The Big E.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell, I want to welcome you back to YSR and the Big E Sports Show on this Friday night. And one of the hot topics this summer is Pokemon Go. It is a craze all over the world. The new game service that eagerly awaited by fans all over and finally launched in July. My oldest son, in fact, he thinks it is the absolute coolest. We're anxious to learn more about it. That's why we have invited back from Block 6 Analytics, the CEO and founder, Adam Grossman. Good evening, Adam. It's nice to have you back.
Great to be back.
All right, so let's break it all down. Pokemon Go. Players are flocking to sports stadiums to catch more Pokemon. Give us the breakdown, the who, what, why. I mean, the impact of Pokemon Go augmented reality mobile games on sports. What is it doing?
Yeah, I think augmented reality is something that's going to really deeply impact sports. And basically what augmented reality is, you know, you have your own, you have your own setting, you have your own place. So think about your backyard, and if you could layer on in your backyard, if you had a basketball hoop in your backyard, mm-hmm. you could layer on your favorite team. So the Houston Rockets or, you know, Los Angeles Lakers, you could have their court on your backyard. So, or you could have your favorite player stats as you're shooting hoops on your own backyard. So the idea of augmenting what's currently happening in your reality is something that's really going to, I think, take hold on sports. And specifically with Pokemon Go, the idea here is that they have little monsters that you go and catch. And the idea of catching them at different sports venues where we can aggregate a bunch of different people creates a really interesting opportunity for sports organizations that the Sacramento Kings, Houston Rockets, Dallas Mavericks have already had Pokemon Go nights. I think you'll see that throughout the country, throughout the NBA, but not just in the NBA and different sports leagues, where they can take advantage of this Pokemon Go craze in order to generate some more money.
Okay, so Adam, how long do you think this craze is going to last? Is this another fad?
It's really funny you mentioned that, because I saw an article where, in doing some research for the article that I wrote for Forbes, where the guy who invented Pokemon actually thought it was a joke, like that he thought nobody would actually like this.
Uh-huh.
And so the joke is really on all of us, and especially him, I guess. But the idea is that, probably a good way of looking at it is, you know, when Pokemon first came out, there was definitely a craze for the first
years.
Yeah, right. And I'm not sure it's going to last as long as that. But if you think of games like Candy Crush or Farmville, you can probably use those as good baselines. And those had, you know, pretty good runs for a couple years. I don't think so. The extreme popularity is not going to last for very much longer. But the popularity of Pokemon, given the emphasis on nostalgia, particularly from Nintendo, which has not only released Pokemon, but also released its old gaming console in a much smaller form. And those things combined have helped Nintendo just become almost triple its value as a company just from those two things alone.
Well, Pokemon Go, it is a smashing hit. Are you surprised that there are so many enthusiasts? And I got to ask you personally, I mean, I was talking to my producer about this, David, tonight. I mean, he's not on board. Are you on board?
It's a good question. I'm on board with other people doing it, I guess.
vicarious thrill, okay.
I do get the appeal of it, and I do think there's actually a lot of benefits that can come from it. In particular, you know, just getting people outside. One of the things that sports organizations are really facing as a challenge is actually getting people to come to the venue. I think we've talked about this a little bit before in a previous interview, but the idea of leaving your couch when you have, you know, your big screen TV, you have your favorite food, you have Wi-Fi that you know is working correctly, it's getting harder and harder for sports organizations at times to attract fans to their venues. The idea of getting people out, getting people to the venue, getting people to, getting to the places where sporting events are happening, and not just sports. I mean, all these different, you know, whether it's museums, parks, open spaces, I think that generally is a good benefit. Now, we want to be careful not that people are, you know, there's been a couple of automobile accidents and people kind of getting off in the middle of the highway to take over these Pokemon monsters. So I think it could be the extreme, you know, don't go to the extreme, but
That's true.
Overall, I think it's a good thing.
Okay, the CEO and founder of Block 6 Analytics, he is also a lecturer for Northwestern University, the Master's Sports Administration Program. That is Adam Grossman. He is always such an intriguing guest when he joins us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We'd love for you to connect with us. Join us at Twitter, @eRadioSports, and Adam, reach out to our national audience. How can they connect with you?
Yeah, you can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at Block 6 Analytics or on Facebook at Block 6 Analytics as well. Or you can follow me personally at Adam R. Grossman.
Oh, Adam is so talented. He has so many articles, his latest in Forbes magazine, which highlights UFC uses new media to secure a $4 billion score. The WWE expanding playing field with this IMG acquisition. Tell us, you talk about the ultimate return on an investment. I mean, you work $4 billion. Are you serious?
Yeah, and it's, you know, as we mentioned in the article and in my book, The Sports Strategist, you know, the UFC was almost on the verge of bankruptcy in 2005, and to go from the on the verge of bankruptcy of 2005 to 2016 being purchased for $4 billion, that is a great return on investment. But, and this is actually goes back to Pokemon Go. What sports organizations can do more frequently is use new technology channels in order to monetize more traditional ways of making money. So the idea being that, UFC started by, especially when reality TV was first starting to become popular, it took advantage of that opportunity, and the UFC made huge investments into social media as social media was beginning to become more and more important. And the idea of making investments in non-traditional channels helped the UFC not only pack the venues for UFC fights, you know, whether it's UFC 100, 200, but also to help them charge a premium for their pay-per-view bouts. So they've really been able to expand because they made investments and smart investments into new technologies and new channels for sports organizations.
Okay, so do you think, Adam, that this sport is getting ready to go to a whole new level? I mean, as we've talked about, you were talking about 2005, incredible growth and expansion in such a short amount of time. With the new ownership, will they continue to accelerate that growth?
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting. I think UFC individual stars have become more and more famous. They've been, you know, movies, television shows. The UFC has a specific plan. One of the things that they've done is they've legalized mixed martial arts in every state in the United States. You know, in 2000, that took a long time, but New York was the last holdout, and it finally passed legislation. So, you know, I think the sky can be, you know, a little bit, I'd say the sky's the limit to a certain extent with UFC, but the idea of, you know, the demographics they're targeting, the way that they use social media, the way that they can use new technologies, the way that they have already, you know, monetized a certain audience group, there's definitely a demand for that kind of content and those types of fights, and I think, you know, as it's becoming more and more mainstream, the more and more likely it is to grow as an organization.
Well, remarkable that at $4 billion, it stands to be the most expensive transaction for an organization in sports history. Let's shift gears as we are running out of time. Kevin Durant, he makes the big crossover, the switch, and goes to Golden State. How big of a hit has his brand taken?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the brand hit might be more on the initial feedback rather than the overall brand hit. So one of the things that my company does is we've created a model that determines the value of a player to a specific team based on their on-field and off-field, or in this case, on-court and off-court contributions to a specific team. And we found actually Kevin Durant's value is going to go up by him joining Golden State. So part of that is that the teams are just going to have more money. And one of the things we look at is how has a player helped generate television revenue. And that will change year over year. But the biggest winner actually is not whether it's, when you're looking at it, though, is Russell Westbrook. He makes a huge jump because of Kevin Durant leaving. You know, Kevin Durant is definitely going to improve, and I think he's going to, you know, we have in our model for 2016, we have Kevin Durant at, you know, as a pretty high earner, and we have him about, he's going to be contributing $75 to $76 million in overall value to the Golden State Warriors, which is a significant amount of money, but
wow.
Compare that to Russell Westbrook. So in our model, we have him at almost at $94 million. So I think the big winner purely from a, you know, how is this person going to contribute value to an organization perspective might be Russell Westbrook.
And that'll be interesting, absolutely, to watch, just the Kevin Durant departure, how that's going to impact his brand. And you talk about KD, I mean, a massive superstar, and I just hate to see how his kind of golden boy image, it kind of took a hit, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it takes a hit in the short term, but it might be similar to what happened with LeBron. I mean, LeBron seemed to have taken a hit
good
in the short term,
yeah,
when he moved to Miami. And then overall, and obviously that's only gotten more, his brand has only grown since the Cleveland won the championship. But even before that, you know, the original hit did not, you know, the amount that he was able to grow his brand, even in Miami, more than made up for the initial hit that he took when he moved to Miami.
Hey, the CEO and founder of Block 6 Analytics, Adam Grossman. He's a regular guest right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Again, Adam, tell all of our audience where they can go and check you out.
Yeah, check us out at block6analytics.com. You'll see us regularly on Forbes and in Comcast Sportsnet Chicago. And you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn.
Absolutely. Listen, we'll talk to you real soon. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
Stick around. Much more coming your way right here at hour number two at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Quinn Buckner, the VP of Communications and Television Analyst with the Indiana Pacers. They have made some savvy moves in the offseason, and we are going to break it all down.
Listening to the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio. Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio, Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
The Big E.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And NBA Summer League, it has come to a close, and the Chicago Bulls concluded the Summer League with a perfect 7-0 record, defeating the Minnesota Timberwolves in the championship game. But right now, in our next segment, hey, we're going to shine the spotlight on the Indiana Pacers and the offseason news and notes with the VP of Communications and Television Analyst for the Pacers. That is the great Quinn Buckner, always a Big E favorite. How are you, Quinn?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you very much.
Oh, I hope you've had an opportunity to kind of relax and refresh over the summer months.
Well, you know, listen, I'd be telling the story if I said I didn't have one of the best jobs in the world. I get to go, you know, around the country, watch NBA basketball and talk about it. That's a pretty good gig. Hard for me to complain about that.
Absolutely. Talk about living the dream. And I tell you what, before we highlight the moves that the Pacers have made in the offseason, I have to share with our listeners. I mean, Quinn, it seems like every time you're on our program, we open up with recognizing and congratulating you on another amazing accomplishment or accolade. In November, you were inducted into the College Basketball Hall of Fame. And now, at your alma mater, Indiana University, you were named to the Board of Trustees, and Governor Mike Pence appointed you to the board. Can you just quantify what that means to you personally and professionally? I mean, that's a tremendous honor.
It's humbling. It's all get out. The College Basketball Hall of Fame was something that this was not like one of those things you aspire to do, and neither was being a trustee. But given that my father, who in the late 40s, early 50s, went to IU and played on the football team, and I've had my sister, my brother, and I've got, you know, and then I've got me, and then I've got three out of my four children that have all gone to Indiana University. To be able to have some input and hopefully provide some thoughts as to some of the policies that are at one of the great institutions on the planet, I can't tell you. You can tell I'm humbled by it. It's mind-boggling. It is very surreal. And I'm tickled to death to be a part of it.
You know, Quinn, what kind of impact do you think you will have in this esteemed position? I mean, you know, what makes an effective board member?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, I got to get informed. We haven't had a board meeting, but I've been blessed enough to be on enough on the boards, non-for-profit and as well as for-profit boards. And really just getting an understanding of what the overall policies are. Without being too political, Dr. Mike McRobbie, who is our president, has done a terrific job.
Uh-huh.
And I think making Indiana one of the great, not just in the country, one of the great global institutions, educational institutions in the world. And I think being able to make sure you just oversee, I mean, that's basically what it is. It's oversee, nothing operational, just in a broad view, and then looking at how education has evolved and what it will evolve and need to be in the future. It's really what my interest is. Because I come from, everybody in my family that I grew up with taught, except me, and I'm from a family of six. So education and academics has always been a part of my background. So I'm looking forward to be a part of Indiana as it migrates through these changes that just have to come with the way people are consuming education and everything else. They just have to be some adjustments, and I think I'm happy to be a part of that.
You are listening to The Voice, the VP of Communications and Television Analyst with the Indiana Pacers. That, of course, is the great Quinn Buckner. He is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Of course, this interview is being brought to you by our good friends at Progressive Insurance. Last year, over 3 million drivers switched to Progressive. Call or click today and find out what you can save. And just one more quick hit. I mean, you played in Indiana from 72 to 76, winning 4 Big Ten titles in 4 seasons. You were the captain of the undefeated 76 national championship team that went undefeated, and Indiana is the last school to accomplish this. Coming from the state of Illinois, I mean, you have come a long way.
That's a mild understatement. I come from a town of 3,000 people. I happen to be all African American, and I'm in an environment where, yeah, you know, like, you know, where we're able as a team to have the kind of success you had. And again, I have to give a lot of credit to, I give credit to Coach Knapp. I give credit to my mother and father, because of who they are and my siblings on what they allowed me to do and become. That's why when we started it off, you said, how am I doing, you know, in terms of, you know, the summer off? And I started thinking about it, because I said this to my brother who asked me, mm-hmm. but they said, Quinn, how are you doing? And this was before the trustee position came about. I said, listen, if you ask me at 10, if I'd be able to do a professional basketball team, be blessed enough to travel with them as they travel and stay where they stay,
wow,
Sent you out of your mind. I've got one of the best, first of all, I got one of 30 jobs in the world. I've been in the NBA since I got out of college. I've been in basketball since since I was 5 or 6 years old, all my life. And I'm telling you, I'm way too blessed to be depressed. It's a good deal here.
And all the time you get to spend with the great Larry Bird.
That's been interesting, as watching him grow as a professional in terms of being in the front office, because he was a terrific basketball player, but the front office is a different animal. I mean, it's a business environment in which I think he's very pragmatic, and he's been able to, over the last, I think since he's been here, he's changed the team, added to it, taken from it, and still been able to create a successful team in terms of, you know, being right there for the playoffs, with the exception of when Paul George got hurt. That says a lot about a person and their ability to orchestrate and organize things. And I've watched him. He is infinitely better on he would be great on your show, because he didn't do that very well when he played, but he's much better at it now. And that's all part of the process. So I've enjoyed watching that kind of growth in Larry, knowing what he is as a person and understanding how great a basketball player he is, and then trying to move up to the same level in terms of what he's doing on the front office side.
Oh, there'd always be an open invitation to have the great Larry Bird on our program. So give us the pulse, Quinn, on the Indiana Pacers. I mean, the reviews in the offseason, it has been very positive, and some are saying you guys are definitely going to be contending in the Eastern Conference. Take time to just assess the progress that you guys have made in the offseason.
Well, again, Larry's done a terrific job. Levin and Kevin Pritchard have done a very good job in being able to. It's going to be interesting, because we're able to get Jeff Teague. Larry Bird wanted to play faster, and so in order to do that, he made the decision to go with Jeff Teague versus George Hill. George is a terrific defensive player, shooter. His speed of play is a little bit slower, but that's not a knock on him. That's just how he plays, and we knew it when we got him. So I think that's fine. Al Jefferson with the second unit, coming from Charlotte. Ought to be, I think, good for the team, because I think it's a little bit different than some people who are defending, given everybody needs a stretch four. You know, somebody's got to guard Al Jefferson, and somebody's going to have to double-team him. Mm-hmm. So you may be able to create some shots there. Thad Young is a nice, long, athletic player for the team, again, wanting to run. That's a little bit more of a running. And then Aaron Brooks, who I was in the gym today and was talking to Coach Nate McMillan, and Aaron Brooks had come in. So, you know, getting him on the floor, I think, is going to be helpful for the second unit to be able to play. When it has to play up-tempo, Aaron Brooks can do it. And so I think that's a nice addition. Again, Larry has done a really good job in being able to manage a salary cap in this kind of generation and still staying competitive. And that's all you really can do in this business until you get that chance, that one chance, mm-hmm. that you had it all pulled together with a healthy Paul George to get him another player. And with Miles Turner, to get that one chance, and then you go out, and then you go for the whole thing. But I think the Pacers have to be really happy. Paul being healthy, I think, is a huge difference, you know, because mm-hmm. I think we saw from the year before there was no Paul George, and Paul George came back. And if anybody watched the Toronto series, Paul George played the game and made the game look as easy as he had since he's been playing. So I think that's good. Miles Turner has a chance to be a terrific player. So I think there is a lot of good components there, but hey, all of this is on paper. Got to put it down. It's got to play together. But Nate McMillan is pleased with it as well. I just had a casual conversation with him, and he's very pleased to be back in the game and with this roster.
Why was Nate McMillan? Why was he the right man for the job?
Well, Kevin Pritchard had worked with Nate when they were in Portland. I'm sure that had a lot to do with it. I think once Larry decided to make the change, I think he looked at a guy who's had great experience. He's been not only a coach at Portland and at Seattle. He'd been part of the teams that have been the USA basketball program. So you're talking about a guy who's got a wealth of experience and tickles me. He's kind of an old school guard in a lot of ways.
I think
for him, this is the right challenge for him at the right time. He's been with this team for the last 3 years, knows mm-hmm. the personnel. And I think it's one of those things that it's, in my opinion, it's almost easier to take somebody that you know within the organization, because you're looking for a tweak, a different approach. And clearly Larry was looking for a different approach. And I think they to bring that to the table.
Always a pleasure to visit with the VP of Communications and Television Analyst with the Indiana Pacers. He's one of a kind, one of the best, the great Quinn Buckner. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Quinn, and carving out some time.
Thanks, Larry. Take care.
Hey, stick around. Much more coming your way right here in hour number 2 of YSR, the Big East Sports Show. We're getting ready to talk about the Big 12 Conference.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show
on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
The Big E.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell, we are back inside the Quicken Loans Studios right here in Houston. And you know what? The start of the 2016 college football season. We cannot wait. It is just around the corner. Big 12 Media Days. They were underway all week in Dallas. And right now it is time for a Texas Two-Step and a preview on the season. Our go-to guy, as always, Sports Beats writer with Horns Illustrated, Steve Habel. Good evening, Steve.
Hello, Alyssa. Thanks for having me on again.
Absolutely. It's wonderful to have you back with us. And you know what's interesting? You're kind of a hybrid. I mean, you cover it all. You travel the world also covering the great game of golf. You've got to give us a quick hit on the historic performance of Henrik Stenson last Sunday.
Well, you know, Stenson is a pretty stoic cat, isn't he? But he was as cool as a cucumber with Mickelson breathing down his neck the whole day. You know, I wasn't overly inspired by the golf course last week, Alyssa, but I sure was inspired by the way those guys played. A two-man race for the last 2 days, basically. And, you know, I think that was a tournament for the ages for Stenson. I mean, it's hard to imagine anybody playing any better golf than that under such pressure. So he's a good guy. Always a great quote and always quick with a quip. So, you know, he was a popular choice to win, no doubt about it.
Well, this is truly what golf should be. It was spectacular, you know, showing by Henrik Stenson, but also just a stunning performance by Phil as he shot that bogey-free round, 65 on Sunday at Royal Troon. Can you believe that wasn't enough?
Well, I just was amazed at how Phil scrambled him, and he knocked the ball all over the yard and ended up getting it home from a couple of crazy places. But, you know, Phil's a pretty cool cat, too. I mean, he knows how to play the game, knows how to golf the ball in those conditions. And that's going into Sunday, I really thought Mickelson may have a little bit of an advantage because he seems to be able to flight his ball a little bit better than Stenson does. He can hit a lower shot. But, Stenson is a high ball player, but they didn't get a lot of wind on the backside on Sunday, which really made a huge difference for Stenson. So, yeah, you think figure a 65 in the final round of the British Open will probably win it. But Stenson was just a little bit better that day.
Steve Habel is back with us from Horns Illustrated. Before we start talking about the Texas Longhorns, I mean, what are your expectations for Phil Mickelson over the next 5 to 10 years? We were talking about this in hour number one already tonight.
You know, Phil seemed like he's really concentrating on the majors now, but he's played well at some tournaments. At Houston, he played well. He seems like he rises up every now and then. I think he could win another major or two, especially in the British Open. Seems like he's really adapted his game to that. U.S. Open would be what he'd want to win more than anything, but I don't know if the venue set up for him to do that. You know, Erin Hills next year is a tough spot for him to do that in. I think he'll be a player, and I think he'll be a great popular player in the Champions Tour when the time comes. I mean, that's a great time for those guys to get out there and play on the Champions Tour. So, I like Phil, and I think everybody else does too.
You bet. Let's shift gears. Let's talk about your Texas Longhorns. It's interesting. College football analyst Phil Steele was on my program a few weeks ago, and he believes Texas may be one of the most improved teams in the country in 2016. Do you agree?
Well, Phil Steele must have a crystal ball that a lot of us...
hey, when he's on my show, he does.
Texas is going to have one of the youngest teams out there, Alyssa. I mean, they're a team that could get some momentum behind them early and really start running things, or they could crash early and then it'd be a catch-up situation. It's hard to think that Texas is going to be really, they're not going to be a favorite against Notre Dame on opening night, that's for sure. But, Notre Dame's lost a lot of players too. But you think that if a team can get a little confidence with that young talent that they have, that they might be able to do it. I haven't predicted them to win more than 7 games this year, and I don't know if that's enough for Charlie Strong to keep his job, but they've got a lot of young talent. They've got a lot of question marks. And, the Big 12 is not backing up. The other teams in the Big 12 are still pretty darn good. So nobody's going to hand Texas any time.
Well, I was wondering, will they even be able to win 8 conference games? You're saying a total of 7. You think that's going to be the best scenario this season?
Well, I'm not talking conference games. I'm talking about total games, let's say. That's,
Wow.
I've predicted they're going to win 7 games in the regular season and go to a bowl game. I enjoy it when Texas goes to a bowl game. That means I get to go travel with them and play some golf somewhere. But I've missed that. I missed, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it was San Antonio, I mean, that's not really much of a trip for us in Austin. And then 2 years ago it was Houston, which was not really, I mean, God bless you, Alyssa, for those in Houston, but that's not really a great garden spot for golf.
Come on.
and then, you know, last year they didn't go at all. But, you know, I think that it's a tough road to hoe. The Big 12 is talented. They've got a lot of great players. I mean, nine of the teams that Texas is going to face have their quarterback returning as a starter from last year. So, and Texas can't boast that at all. They've got question marks at quarterback. So, you know, seven wins may be optimistic depending on what happens at the first of the year. It may be low depending on if they can get on a roll, but that's kind of where I'm standing right now.
Yeah, but Texas, they've got this new offensive coordinator, Sterling Gilbert. I mean, he arrived from Tulsa where he was the offensive coordinator. He's going to be looking what to increase the tempo, and I understand he's a disciple of Art Briles' offensive system.
Yeah, he is. Sterling is a disciple of a lot of offensive systems, but he's never actually called plays before as an offensive coordinator, and it's a little bit different playing, you know, coaching Tulsa than it is University of Texas against Big 12 opponents every week. I think the proof is still out there. We have to figure out if Gilbert can coach up these guys and get them going at his tempo. And you know, that doesn't mean that Texas defense is going to stop anybody. And he's not coaching the defense. I mean, Texas statistically had the worst defense that they've ever had last year, which is crazy. And that was one side of it wasn't addressed with a lot of issues. But, you know, Charlie Strong came to Texas, you know, as a defensive coach, and now he's kind of jumped over to the dark side and become a, well, if I can't beat him on defense, I've got to try to beat him with offense, mm-hmm. get that one extra possession, go faster. So, you know, I think that until we see what's going to happen with Sterling Gilbert, until those guys get a little adversity, there's no telling where that's going to go at this point.
That, of course, was Steve Habel with Horns Illustrated. Always a big thank you to all of our amazing guests in our lineup. We'll see you after my vacation in 2 weeks right here at the Big E Sports Show.